talk for, Ronnie's going to tell me at 13 minutes. I know myself, if there's someone talking for, like, even if it was Jesus himself speaking, if it was, like, at the top of the hour, I'd be like, all right, Omi, like, wrap it up. So I'm gonna try to stay. But emotional sobriety is everything, right? So we'll see how this goes. I've been sober since July 2nd, 2015, because of the grace of God, these meetings, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and good sponsorship. And for that, I'm forever grateful. So I'm going to qualify really quick because it helps me when people qualify, or else I feel like they're not as sick as I was. So when I came here, I had been in and out of hospitals, in and out of jails, in and out of rehabilitation centers, in and out of doctor's offices, in and out of therapist offices, probation offices, and these meetings. And I could not stay sober. I was a hopeless alcoholic. I wanted to quit, but I couldn't. I had burned every bridge. I had nothing left to my name. And I became a needle junkie. And I am grateful for that because I believe if that was not the case, I would not have been given ears to hear you guys. So then I came in and I was taught about alcoholism. I was taught that I had a physical allergy to alcohol. Once I started, I couldn't stop. And I had a mind that always convinced me to put it in my system again. And that I drank for the ease and comfort that came at once from a drink. And that then I'd have some terrible consequence and I would emerge with a firm resolution never to do that again. And then I'd get irritable, restless, and discontent in a day, an hour, a week, a month, a year, and I'd drink again. And that unless I had a psychic change, I was gonna keep doing that over and over and over and over again, and keep repeating the same jails, institutions, and death. So I took against my, is there anyone with less than 30 days here, by the way? Okay. Against my intellect, I took suggestions that didn't seem like they would work for me, and I got a sponsor, and I got in the book, and I went to meetings, and I prayed every morning for a God that I didn't even believe in to help me, and I thanked a God that I didn't believe in at night for keeping me sober, and I listened to the old timers, man. I had a lot of sponsor number ones in my life, and I'm grateful for them. And they say I'm really grateful for people that cared more about saving my ass than my feelings, because that's what I needed. So I was taught about the unmanageability, right? And so when I came in, I was like, okay, unmanageability, you know, obviously my life's unmanageable. I have like literally nothing, you know, I was facing prison time. I was homeless. My life was unmanageable. This was clear to me, but they told me stop looking for the unmanageability in like the drama of your life. That's different for all of us. Like stop trying to be special. Like the unmanageability is inside, it's internal. And that is what you've been pouring alcohol on. And so on page 52, this is what was told to me was the unmanageability, the second part of step one, which is we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. And when Ronnie asked me to speak on emotional sobriety, I was like, oh, I think that that's it. You know, I mean, I was told to go back to this paragraph if things seem to be getting unmanageable in my sobriety, which they have, And this is a good check for untreated alcoholism, which is dry, right? It's like doesn't have to do with alcohol. I'm the type of alcoholic where without alcohol, I can actually be worse if I'm not working a program. So I figured I would just pick a few of those, you know, they all can manifest in my life, but like trouble with personal relationships. So four-step really helped with that. But for me, it's like always finding compassion for the other person, right? Because I'm a self-centered alcoholic. So I'm the type of person that like at the red light, if you don't go right away, I'm like, what are you doing? Like I have somewhere very important to be, you know? But if you're behind me and I didn't go right away and you honk at me, I'm like, where do you have to be? You know? So I want mercy for me and justice for you. And so I have to really use a sponsor to get out of my perception of things, which is always selfish and self-centered to this day, and find compassion for the other person. And in other instances, the amends process God has just granted me forgiveness through making an amends. That happened with my dad. Also being taught to look at that person's story. One of my first sponsors, she would always say to me, haven't you ever done anything like that? You know, every time I was pissed at someone, and the answer was always yes, you know? So resentment is obviously the number one offender. I can't afford it. And those are like a few tools that I've been taught and that I use to get free of that. And then emotional natures, can't control our emotional natures, it says in here. Like, so this is a big one for me with my temper. I'm an alcoholic. Like when I made amends to my brother, he was like, I was a blackout drinker, so I don't remember a lot of my drinking career. But my brother said to me when I made amends to him, he said, I never knew when you were going to blow, like what we were going to get from you, you know? And drinking, I would throw like coffee pots. I would throw big potted plants in my mother's house. I threw things. And in sobriety, I remember specifically, I was like caught in traffic trying to get to go chair a meeting, and I was stuck in traffic, and I punched the wheel of my car and ended up chairing that meeting with like bloody fists. So like, I have a temper. And the only thing I've found that was early sobriety, okay, by the way. But the only thing I've found to help that is prevention. So doing, working this program, you know, and I can pray, I can be on my way to a meeting and act out, but it's really taking my temperature. So like I was taught, like when I'm at like a 5 or a 6, like I need to get to work, you know, I need to do a spot check. I need to call my sponsor, you know, when these things crop up. How much time do I have? Okay. It's having my foot in all three legacies of this program is the only way that I've been able to not act out. And I mean, like I did one time, and I went to a meeting and shared about it, and these big biker dudes that were so awesome, like shared similar experiences. And I remember going up to them after and being like, God, I just feel like a hypocrite though. You know, like I'm trying to work this program. And he's like, he said, why? Like we're all crazy. You know, that's why we come here. And the miracle is we don't all go crazy on the same day, so we can help each other. And then the prey to misery and depression. Like, I had a suicide attempt before I ever had a sip of alcohol, you know? I was not like, I'm one of those alcoholics. Like, I wanted my life to be recreated. I didn't want to be who I was before I came here or before alcohol. Like alcohol was a solution to me for a living problem. So I can fall to the basement so fast again, if I'm not in all three parts of this program, which is meeting, service, and the big book, The Steps. So like, I fall to the basement real fast. When I get depressed, I like to act really depressed. I like to put on really sad music and get in my bed and like think about every sad thing that's ever happened to me. So the solution to that for me is to get out of myself, because it's not, I don't think well of myself. So when I do that, it gets really, really depressing when I'm in self. And I was taught like the selfishness is not thinking well of yourself, it's thinking only of yourself. And when I'm in self-pity, like that's what I'm doing. So again, like we were just talking, it's a doing program. Like I don't think myself, I do contrary action to how I feel, which is like when I'm in my crap and I'm sad, I try to call someone else and say, how are you? And take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth and shut up and listen to them, you know? And another way I get gratitude, man, is like, I was like, God, it's so hard. I had a baby and I'm like, it's so hard to work, to get to meetings with a baby. That sounds so silly coming out of my mouth. But, so I just find someone who like has a toddler and a baby to sponsor me and she goes to meetings. So, and a teenager. So, so things like that, there's always people in this program to be an inspiration, and I'm so grateful for everyone that keeps coming back and paves the road ahead of me. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Kathy, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm grateful to be here, and thank you, Ronnie, for asking me to share tonight. My sobriety date is February 14th of 2020, and my sobriety date is February 14th, 2020, and I have been trying to get sober since about 2009. When I came into these rooms, my perspective of the world was very clouded. I had no idea what emotional sobriety was, and I was very sick and very enmeshed with everybody else around me. I had no idea how to be my own individual. So when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, it took me quite a while to come and stay and learn to sit still. And it wasn't until 2018 that I really had the gift of desperation. I was really sick and I was really lost, and I ended up in the trailer out in the foothills, curled up in a corner sobbing, because I had waited from 2009 to 2017 to reach out and ask a woman to help me, to sponsor me. So I was pretty much, you know, at my bottom, obviously. Fast forward a little bit, I had a couple relapses up until 2020. And what was interesting was I had moved to Phoenix, and I had found a woman, what I call today, she spoon-fed me my spirituality, very much so. She was my sponsor. She was is an amazing woman. And it was then when she took me through the 12 steps that I started to find a foundation for myself and a new design for living. Like, I knew that there was a better way, but it took me all that time to figure out that I had to do something different. I just had to do something different. And then when I did the 12 steps with her, and I came to realize that that was my foundation, that's when I started to figure out that I had a higher power of my understanding. So then fast forward a little bit, even more, I came to a place where I was so enmeshed with everybody and everything outside of me. I took everybody else's emotions on. I took everybody else's situations on. I gave them my chaos. I took their chaos. And it was just like this emotional roller coaster, even sober, and doing the 12 steps and coming to the realization that I had to find a God of my understanding. It wasn't until recently that I came to realize that I had to do work from the inside out. I had to do work from the inside out. And that came from finding a God of my understanding. And it came, you know, very slow and very gradual through experiences of temperaments, temper tantrums, you know, trying to just constantly control person, places, and things. I wanted to run everybody's show, even sober, you know, and I am a selfish and self-centered alcoholic, and I didn't know that balance of self-love versus selfishness. Like, I couldn't figure out how to love myself enough without it being this, like, selfish thing. Like, I could never find that balance. But it just, you know, things started happening, and it just started to become gradual, and it was exhausting to go to work and have these expectations of people to, you know, do what I wanted them to do. I couldn't control people's show. I couldn't control my children. I couldn't control my relationships. I couldn't, and it just, slowly I started to realize that I had no emotional sobriety, you know, I remember it was 2 years ago. I was sitting in a parking lot in Phoenix, and it was right after Christmas, and I was just sobbing. And I had heard my sponsor say, you know, it'd be really cool this year to ask for my God to be bigger. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, I need to ask for that. And, you know, I have to honestly say, that's just like, that was when I surrendered to, like, I needed to heal from the inside out. I'm just, you know, I went through this huge transition recently, and I just moved here to Yuma, and I moved here by myself pretty much, you know. And 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I swore I'd never come back to this town. This is where my perception of my life was created, and I swore I would never come back to this town. But I can tell you, in just the last 2 years, I have figured out that I can take myself anywhere. And that alone is only because of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is only because I finally surrendered and got a sponsor. That is only because I did the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is only because I stayed teachable. And I continue to stay teachable because it's so important for me to grow emotionally and to be able to stand on my own 2 feet and to be able to just walk and be okay with who I am and my own little spirit and just say, I'm okay, because we're all on our own journey. I'm not supposed to be like Ronnie. I'm not supposed to be like Caitlin. I'm supposed to just be like Kathy. And I'm supposed to have my own. This is my own journey. But you guys taught me that. It was only because I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that I finally sat down and I quieted myself enough to realize the gifts that I get from these rooms. And I grow, and I get a little bit more of emotional sobriety, you know, because I stay in the rooms and I suit up and I show up and I make my God bigger. I make my God bigger, because for me, that is the most important thing. That is the solution for this alcoholic. And everything else is just an added gift. Everything else is just an added gift, because with the God of my understanding, I can do anything. I know I can do anything. Am I going to be perfect at it? No. Do I want to some days? Yeah, because I'm an alcoholic and I'm all or nothing. And I'm like, can't you just give me all of this right now? Like, I want all the answers right now. But this program has taught me that's just not how it comes. I just have to sit, and I have to learn to quiet, and I have to learn to wait for the answers. and just stay in gratitude for everything that I get to do today because of this program. So I'm really grateful to be here, and thank you so much, you guys, for asking me to be up here today. And I'll pass. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
My sobriety date is May 10th, 1992. And I'm going to get emotional just on my sobriety date. You know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous a lot like Caitlin. God, didn't they do a great job? Both of them. They did a great job. And thanks, Bo and Ronnie. It's just good to see Ronnie. I don't ever get to see her. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm a mess, man. I wasn't just a drug addict alcoholic. I was diagnosed bipolar and clinically depressed and all these things, and just a basket case. And I come in, first of all, I was introduced at 19. I didn't sober up till 24, but I was 24, right? So now I look back and I go, thank God I was 24 and I didn't have to continue, right? I learned to be a dad and was able to raise my kids, and I had six children, and they're all good kids. I said had, and I'll get to that later, but anyways, I come into AA and I've got all these problems, and when I sobered up at 24, I was taught never to say no to an AA request, right? And I didn't say no. I had a strong home group, 40 to 60 guys that regularly met three times a week and all kinds of stuff. And around 3.5 years sober, my life had never been better. I had the wife, the kids, the cars, the house, a business, 5 employees, and you know, on the outside, everything was awesome, never been better. But on the inside, unbeknownst to me, I was suicidal out of nowhere, in recovery, right? And my life had never been better. So during this time, what happened was I met a guy that was very literal about the directions in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would have told you at that time that I'd been through the steps 3 times. I was actually on my fourth step when I met this guy. And it kind of pissed me off because he shows up in this meeting traveling through Yuma, and what he shared and how he shared, I was like, who the hell is this guy, right? And after the meeting, I grabbed him and I started talking to him, and in like 10 minutes, he convinced me that I'd never followed the directions as they were outlined in that book. And at the time, I thought I was Mr. AA, right? seven to 20 meetings a week, and really, really active, but I was the boy whistling in the dark, right? I was at the jumping off place, literally. And my life had never been better, and I didn't understand why. So I meet this guy, and he gives me some directions, and he goes to San Diego for 8 days, and he comes back through Yuma. And because I did what he said, he moved here from Florida to take me through the rest of the directions. And that's how committed he was, right? And this guy, when he shared, he was so humble and kind, right? And, you know, to my best ability, I still come off arrogant and abrasive, right? I really would love to carry the message the way this guy did. And anyways, he takes me through the steps, and, you know, I admitted, and I can't, I'm rushing through this. Oh, I didn't start my phone, Ronnie. It's on you. I can't admit it, I was out, my life was unmanageable, and I came to believe, and I made a decision. And then this guy took the directions in the book literally, like really literally. And my inventory is huge, and it's God-given. When I met this guy, I thought I had maybe 10 people. You know, I'd done this 3 times. Maybe 10 people I was mad at. And I made a commitment to him that I would spend an hour a day uninterrupted on an inventory. Uninterrupted, no phone, no kids, no TV, no radio, nothing. Just me and the directions. And he did a really good thing for me. He asked me to put out of my mind what I thought God was and just allow the demonstration. So I try to do that. And I'm like, I have to do this hour uninterrupted. I might be mad at 10 people. The first direction is that we write this list of the people that have pissed us off, right? And just the names, that's all he wanted. And I'm like, I'm 10 people, how am I gonna fill up this hour? And he says, I don't care, sit there, ask God for help and follow the directions. So I did that and I wrote nonstop for 20 minutes. I had 278 names listed. And I think, you know, in my personal belief, I believe God said, you wanna know how pissed off you are? Bam, here it is. And it set up this huge inventory and this huge experience. And, you know, I literally have hundreds of hours of uninterrupted time with my Creator. And I'm so grateful for that, because I'm so grateful Alcoholics Anonymous is not a religion, right? I was religious then, and I'm gonna say it didn't work for me. Right? It wasn't my church. I didn't leave the church because of the church. I left the church because I think this is what God wants me to do, right? And it's to help others and carry this message that I've been given. Anyways, so I do this huge inventory. My fifth step was ridiculous and huge humbling experience, right? I believe it was an act of God. It took an act of God to sober me up and set me free. And that inventory and the fifth step and being humbled like that. You know, I think emotional recovery comes in 6 and 7. I really do. And I forget where I was going with that, but you can look it up on 76. There's a couple of paragraphs there that nobody takes real seriously. And you know, by the grace of God, the way it was shown to me, I have 4 character defects. And they're selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and fear. And I learned that in my 4-step. 4, that's it. And for a guy like me, I need that simplicity, right? And when I got honest with those things in my life, all the stuff that I thought were character defects were explained in those 4 things: selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and fear. So there's a simple way for me to look at it. Anyways, now, 2018, I want to share a couple of stories with you. 2018, my wife got really sick, and she was sick the whole year of 2018. She had 6 surgeries, 4 failures, and she's 9 years younger than I am, right? So it's like, that was a lot for me to go through. Then my mother dies unexpectedly, right? 67 years old, she dies unexpectedly. And all this stuff is happening to me in 2018. Now, I know from my experience that me trying to control and manage my life or the lives of those around me does not work ever, even with good intentions. I'm clear on that. But somehow I got swept up in my wife's medical problems, and I even had a nurse tell me she needs an advocate, right? She needed somebody there, but I jump in with both feet trying to control and manage the situation. And it made me crazy, right? Like it took my peace, it took my serenity. And unbeknownst to me. And then when my mom died, that was the icing on the cake. And so for about 2 months, which for me is a really long time, I don't go 20 minutes usually. So for 2 months, I'm floundering around going, what the hell? My 10th step is garbage, right? My meditation went in the tank. My prayers weren't heartfelt. Everything that I knew to work wasn't working for 2 months. And I was sitting out in a parking lot talking to a new guy. I think he had about 4 months. And he mentioned, "Thy will, not mine, be done." And it was like a lightning bolt hit me. I even like jumped on my Harley and took this long ride with my brother and, you know, everything I could to try to get back on the path, and I couldn't. And this guy says, you know, "Thy will, not mine, be done." And he had like 4 months of recovery, and it hit me like a lightning bolt, right? That's what I had forgotten. "Thy will, not mine, be done." And it went with me every day, all day for years, and I took it for granted, right? And as soon as he said that, then I was able to get back on the path, and it just was huge blessing. So out of the mouths of babes, right? Actually, most times it's the new guys that yank me up, right? I just love this program. Now, I'm gonna try not. How long do I have? Okay, so I should be able to hook this in here. 2021, October. My oldest daughter, the one that made me a dad, out of six, she's 36 years old. She got COVID, and she was 27 weeks pregnant. She didn't have any other kids. Her clock started ticking, and she wanted a baby, and she wanted it now, and she was so excited to get pregnant. And she never got to meet him. COVID killed her, 33 days in ICU. Horrible way to die. And because they're behind glass, right? You can't go in there. They're in isolation. So it was horrible. It was a horrible thing. The reason I share this story with you, by the way, so I get this out of the way, the baby is doing fantastic. He was born 2.5 pounds, and he went down to 1.9, one the size of your cell phone. And today he is bouncing, healthy baby boy. And I got to take care of him 3 days a week for 9 months. And then the kids moved to Tucson. So I don't know, we had him full time for, I'm getting hands in the back saying speak up. We had him full time for 6 weeks because the daycare had a waiting list. So I got to experience all that too, which was beautiful. He's my fourth grandchild, by the way. My oldest grandchild's 11. Anyways, I tell you that story because after my daughter died, I was never mad at God, which is a miracle, right? I mean, for me, that's huge. And because I was really pissed off at God when I got here. And to not be is a miracle. Anyways, I was not all right. I was not all right for a good 6 months, maybe 8 months. And by the grace of God in this program, the directions in that book, I've been able to say life is good again, right? And just because I don't understand why things happen doesn't mean that it's wrong. It's interesting to me because we always said that Cheryl was an old soul, right? And so now I just look at it as her time was up, right? It was time for her to move on. And it was not easy. It was definitely the hardest thing that I've had to go through in recovery. And I still, right, I'm sad. I miss her. But, man, going from this sick, alcoholic, bipolar, clinically depressed, obsessive compulsive, anal retentive, you know, I mean, all kinds of stuff. I too spent a lot of time on the couch with the shrink, and you know, I found out that I couldn't be honest with myself, so I couldn't be honest with them, right? And they couldn't apply their knowledge. I mean, I'd feel better for an hour a day or whatever, but it never worked. It was short-lived always. So today, to be able to sit here, in front of you guys, I was telling Kathy before the meeting, when I got here, I was so antisocial. I did my shopping like 3 o'clock in the morning. I hated people. I did not want to be around people at all. And I definitely wouldn't do something like this, you know. But these two guys, man, Ronnie and Bo, I love these guys. And Bo is just an incredible inspiration to my recovery, right? They're just amazing people. So emotional sobriety for me to live through that and still be sober, and now to be sharing it to you guys, to me, that's the omnipotence of God right there. I'm done. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Mike? That's right. Hello, everyone. My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. And through the grace of God and the fellowship of this program, I have been sober all day today. And my sobriety date is October 12, 1986. And I just love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my wife said to me, there probably will only be a few people sitting in on this thing, so it's not a big deal. And I walked in here, and I'm looking at all these people, and I'm thinking, Bo must have started telling people I was going to speak. I'm not going to tell them where I do go. So. But for me, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous not because I drank too much, because my wife thought it would be a good idea. And she has got 41 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, she's been kind of guiding me along the way as a sponsor, you know, the last 36 years, because she has a lot of wisdom. And if you don't know any Al-Anons, you know that they will tell you that they've got wisdom. But I came back because I love it. I love this program. I love everything about it. And for me, you know, I drank too much for a long, long, long time. And I came out west when I was 18, 19 years old. And my friends and I had gone to Woodstock. I'm from upstate New York. And so we went. I tell my sons now that I have to watch all of those shows, you know, where they talk about people that went to Woodstock, because I don't remember being there. But I think I had a hell of a good time. And so I left, and we went to Southern California. And anytime anybody ever asked me, I said, you know, I went, because I knew that there was gold in the streets. And I liked free sex. So free love is a great thing. And I didn't find any gold. So we'll let that one go. You know, I did drink a lot. I drank a lot every chance I got. The fellow that spoke last night talked about Red Mountain wine. You guys are old enough to remember, most of you, Red Mountain wine. It comes in a case has 4 gallons, 1 gallon jugs. And I don't think they don't make it anymore, but it was 69 cents a gallon. And that's what we took to Woodstock. 4 of those cases, there were 4 of us, and each one of us got a case. And I gotta tell you, I had a hangover that lasted for a month. You know, this is the cheapest wine that the world has ever seen, you know? And I know they run it through some kind of barnyard stuff or something, you know, because it was horrible, horrible stuff. I've never drank wine since then. But I've drank everything else. I'm a connoisseur of about anything you can bring up that makes my thinking change a little bit. While we were in California, you know, I got in trouble lots of times, but not so much trouble that I ended up in trouble with the law. But I kept going back to whatever it would take so that I didn't have to, so that I felt good. And everybody was throwing a party, and there was no end to the parties. And so when I ran into my wife, which, by the way, I've been married to for 48 years. Now, God only knows why she stuck around with me, because I cannot give you a good reason. You know, because I went to a rehab, and a month into it, she came to the rehab. It was one of those ones in Wittenberg. And I decided it would be a great idea to do my fifth step with her. It may be the biggest mistake I ever made in my life. But we lived through it. We lived through it, and I don't really know exactly how that happened. But you know, every time I had a problem because I had been drinking to a point where I couldn't remember where the hell I was or what I was doing. I'd leave for the hardware store at 10 o'clock on Saturday and come back Sunday night. As a matter of fact, that happened once, and I came back without my pants. And every time I've talked over the years, I say the same thing, and that is, I just hope those pants never show up. It's not going to be a good thing. When I did come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was living and working in Mexico, and we came back, and the company let me go, and you know how that goes. But they did give me a round trip to a rehab place, and I thought it was a bad idea. I didn't have a drinking problem. You know, I had a dosage problem. You know, I couldn't quite get the dosages lined up to exactly what I, so I could stop on a dime and make a turn and just have fun. I had no idea what all of that was gonna, what I was gonna mean. And so when we got out of rehab, I didn't have a job, and we traveled with our two sons for about 6 months because I got some severance pay, and we had a great time, and I learned to fish with my kids and in sobriety, and we camped everywhere in the country, and it was a wonderful thing. And I found out about Alcoholics Anonymous, going to meetings all over the country. I learned things from people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and so that's why I say, you know, when I got here, I didn't have a God. And from time to time, I had and have a God, more now, of course. Most all the time, my God shows up all the time. But it's a fellowship I can count on. You know, I can make some calls, so I can be in a meeting, and I can listen real closely to what's going on. And I can hear the solution to the issues that are going on. Now, God doesn't show up and appear while I'm at a meeting, but the fellowship shows up and the people show up, and I can hear something going on, and I get an answer. And usually that answer is, keep your mouth shut, keep your head down, and you'll stay out of trouble, and this will pass, and you will have learned something out of it. You know, the thing that I've found that becomes a larger problem is I thought when I learned something in Alcoholics Anonymous that was it. But I have had to relearn things over and over and over and over, and I could keep going for a while. And I'm going, hell, I had a handle on this. What happened? You know, I mean, I wrote about this. And I go back and take a look at it. Sure enough, I wrote about it. But it took on a different nature or something, small change, and all of a sudden it threw me again. And so I would go back to the meeting, and I would get the fellowship to talk to me about it and tell me what's going on. I'd make lots of calls. I'd call all over the country as the people I'd run into, and you know, because I had lots of sponsors from traveling. But what happened to me was that after I'd been sober a couple of months, I asked my sponsor, when does God show up, you know? Now, I was doing good, but I didn't feel God. I felt the fellowship. And he said, you know, this is how this works. There's a second step, and nobody pays a lot of attention to the second part of that second step. He said, just for today, you've been restored to sanity. He says, I can only promise you one thing. Insanity will return. Because that's what happens. And it happens, I believe, because God knows my, how does that go? My memory's great, it's just short. And so I learned something, and God sends me down the road, and I pay close attention to what's going on, and all of a sudden, I go through it one more time, and I've been restored to insanity. And that's why in Alcoholics Anonymous, you all know what I'm talking about. You know, I don't know how that works or why it works, but I once thought that, you know, once I learned something, got through the steps, went to book meetings, and was part of the program, that I would not have an issue learning one specific thing. I mean, that power greater than me is God. It's not me. And I've been restored to sanity, or insanity, as the case would be. Well, I found out through my sponsor, I was one of those guys around here that we started a meeting at the jail. And we would go, you know, and I loved those meetings at the jail. They were absolutely out of this world wonderful. I could go, and we could go in there, and that door would clank shut and go click, 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 and lock it up tight, and go up to the library and meet those guys. And I just thought, you know, the first time was a little scary, but I found out they let me go. And every time I went, though, I learned something. And there's one particular story that's kind of interesting. I listened to a guy who got out, you know. We'd seen him up there for 6 months, and we'd go every Saturday. And he got out. And so, you know, we all gave him a hug, and he was gone for a couple of weeks. And then about the third week, he was back. Not unusual, you know. And so I asked him, I said, what happened? What are you doing back at this party one more time? What's going on? He said, well, I was all the way down on First Street. He says, and I was going kitty corner across this open parcel of land. And he says, my buddies were out there underneath the tree, and they had a cooler, and it was hot out. And, you know, Yuma sun's hot. And he said, they were drinking Budweiser. He said, and I stood there, and they asked me if I want one. No, I don't want one. No, I do not want one. He says, and I stood there for 20 minutes, and all of a sudden, he says, the guy a few feet from me opened one up, and the spray wafted all over my body. And he says, and I was all right with that. But then I took another look, and there were streaks of condensation going down the side of that can. And at that point, I was powerless. Now, that was probably 30 years ago, but I remember it was like yesterday, because I learned a lot out of it. I don't know whether he did or not, and I never, you know, he was in there for a few months later, and they let him out again. I'm not sure he came back or what happened, but for me, I learned. I learned something like that. I learned a lot. I learned about coming back. No matter what happens, I learned about picking up that 10,000-pound phone and getting some calls made. I have a gratitude list to keep my serenity in place. I left it on the counter at home. Usually I carry it with me. It's in my big book. I've got two or three copies of it. You know, when I'm not in the right spot, when I'm not feeling that serenity and peace, I have to look at my list and have gratitude for what's going on. And the other thing is if I don't carry it, I can't add something else on when the next miracle happens. So the serenity comes by me paying attention to that. And I do that best by taking it one day at a time. Because I know that looking at what happened in the last week or last year, or some resentment that doesn't amount to anything, or whatever one of those things that my brain, you know, came to a stop on and looked at, that I had to go back and relearn again, that, you know, I lost my serenity for a little bit until I talked to some people. And then I prayed about it, and then I did this, got my serenity or my peace, my list out, and did that. And not too long down the line, I could come to the realization that I learned something more. I learned something more continuously. I just recognize it now because I have a mental block. The block says, all right, here it is, but you're not going to recognize it here 6 months from now when it happens the next time. And so then I have to learn again. And I used to beat myself up, like that young man that spoke here an hour ago. I beat myself up to no end because I know that I went over this. I know that exactly the things to do to get around those feelings. That third step prayer that we read all the time, that tells me how to get my serenity in place. Do those things. Do some service work. I also went to the prison for 5 years. As a matter of fact, I started the meetings out there in 1985, 86, before Bill came to live here. And once again, I've seen some of those people. I run into them, and once again, the door swung shut. I was in there, and we didn't really run it like a meeting. We would talk to people one-on-one and say, what brings you to this party? How'd you get a vacation in this place? You know, and they'd laugh. But they would open up. And if they don't open up, they don't catch any parts of what's going on. But they remember. And we had three or four at a time out of 16 to 20. They like to come because it looks good on their card. You know, they can write out, hey, going to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And so then I got to initial those things, and we look at initial. Should I initial this? Are you really here for anything? I've never heard you talk. I've been here for 6 months. And so I find that through going through that I want to go that way. I don't want to try that one more time. I want to pay close attention to my wife because she's right most of the time. I hate to admit that, but it's the truth. And I run out of time yet? Almost. Anyway, those are the kinds of things that I've learned to bring back my serenity. And that third step prayer is wonderful. It tells me exactly what I need to do, where I need to be, and what I need to do for the day, and what I can pick out that will change my thinking about me. Because when I change that thinking about me, my life is wonderful. I'm going to keep coming back.
Thank you.
Thanks for telling everybody, Bill.